Hello and welcome to another episode of the Palace Way podcast. As always, I'm your host, Pat. I'm here with regular guest, Bobby. Bobby, how are we doing?
Good evening. I'm very well, thank you. I'm obviously heard you've had some storms out in Florida, so I hope everything's all okay there.
Yeah, it was. It was tough. It was a rough Thursday and Friday. A lot of people damages in their homes and displaced, so my thoughts out to them, but we were lucky. We were spared. We were actually able to house our brother-in-law and sister-in-law and give them a safe spot. So lucky for that. And moving forward now, we have another guest here, Luke Weezer Seisha. Luke also has his own podcast, Luke Talks Football. Luke, how are we doing?
Yeah, I'm not too bad, mate. And thanks for absolutely perfecting that name.
You're welcome. You're welcome. And let's just get into it. Hey, we wish we could be in sunnier times here in the Tampa Bay area, figuratively and literally, literally in the storm that just passed, and figuratively for me with Crystal Palace still looking for another victory. So let's go right into the intro of it for the lineups. Bobby, I'll throw this one to you. Do you think that we're kind of doing a square peg and round hole type situation, or do you think it's kind of necessitated by the injuries that we've incurred?
No, I think it's square peg and round hole. Absolutely. I think that's the perfect way to put it. I think it's stubbornness from Oliver Glasner, as I've written this morning, will probably be tomorrow or the following day, whenever you're listening to this. But yeah, I just think it's I think it's poor selection personally. I don't think Kamada should be playing in the defensive midfield role. I don't think Nketiah should be playing in the 10. I don't think Mateta should be starting the way he's playing at the moment. I just think there's so much wrong with the selection at the minute. Personally, I would have played Will Hughes against Everton. I was chatting to someone on the train on the way up, and I said Hughes was probably the perfect man to play in that game. He's got that little bit of aggression. And I think he could have done well in midfield with Adam Wharton against the strong midfield of Everton. And I just think Palace are pretty lacklustre at the moment. Lacklustre may be harsh on the first half, but the second half, I mean, it was abysmal. Nothing about them whatsoever. No character. The minute adversity came, Palace crumbled. And I just think it's very messy at the moment.
Luke, how about you? In terms of the starting 11 selection, both in terms of personnel as well as in terms of their positioning on the pitch, where do you see that?
Yeah, I somewhat agree with Bobby there. I don't think Mateta at the moment is doing enough. Yes, he got the two goals against Leicester, but for his height in that, for me this season, something he's really struggling to do is win balls in the air, hold up the ball, bring the other players around him into play. And that's a really big issue for us at the moment because we're trying to bring him in further closer to the midfield and he's just perfect in the box, basically. That rest of the play he can't do. So at the moment, I'm not enjoying him there. Kamada, yeah, he's always going to split opinion, but it was so weird. Tale of two halves with him for sure. And yeah, it was confusing. It was confusing the way we're setting up at the moment. I agree again with Bobby. Will Hughes could have probably done well there, especially with Goodison Park. Atmosphere wasn't great there, but then moments when it turns on you, someone like Will Hughes, I think, would have definitely been able to handle it a lot better.
And picking up on what you said, actually, I thought Kamada improved defensively against Manchester United, but he was really poor on the ball. He had the worst passing stats of any player. And I mean, against Everton, I don't think he was great defensively. I think he looked lightweight in there again, the previous Kamada that we had seen. His passing was okay, but I mean, there was key times where he made the errors. In the build-up to the goal, I think he was a little bit short in the pass. Eze was lazy. Yes, Eze should have stepped forward, but I think the pass was light in the first place. And there was a situation in the second half where he just passed the ball straight out of play to nobody. It's just his vision's not there. He's not quite settled into the Premier League yet. But I don't know how long you can continue with the defence of a player's not settled into the Premier League when he's had six games already. He's played in the Glasner system before. But the other issue you've got is at Lazio last year, whenever he played in the holding role, he looked poor. It wasn't his natural position. Everyone could tell it's not his natural position. Yet Glasner's not learning. He looked poor at Lazio last season. It was probably his worst season in terms of numbers he's ever had. Yet Palace have brought him in and are playing him in the exact same position he played at Lazio, where he was poor. And he's been poor in that position for Palace. So it doesn't make sense to continue with the same plan when there's clearly issues with it.
Yeah, and I like to look at it from all lenses, I suppose. And you're absolutely right. There are components of being in a pivot, a pivot, a duo in the Premier League in the midfield that you need to be decent at the very least. You have to be physical, you have to be, maybe not pacey, but you have to be quick with your lateral movements. And he just doesn't really offer too much of that. But the one thing he does offer, and we have to take the good with everything else we're seeing, is he gets to the base and meets up with that back three. He can get on the turn, he can scan, he can play balls forward. He plays a lot of progressive balls. That's something that Wharton's not great at. He'll start to contribute more into the middle third, but that opening build, I think maybe this is just me kind of thinking out loud, playing devil's advocate for Glasner. I think that he sees someone as needing to be a replacement for what Anderson did with his passing, and he's dropping Kamada back to try and
But
replicate.
I don't buy that logic because, first of all, I think Kamada is good.
Thinking out loud for the record here.
First of all, Kamada is on paper very good technically. He's a very technical player. So I think, firstly, he suits that right 10 role. But just on the Anderson point, that passing repertoire should be replaced by Maxence Lacroix because he is more than capable of being very good on the ball. Another centre half that we haven't quite seen yet because of injuries, but he was on the bench this weekend. Trevor Chalobah, he's very good on the ball. Mark Gay is pretty decent on the ball, as we saw in the Euros. He doesn't use that long range passing long range passing much for Palace, but when he does, it's good. And when he did it for England, it was very good. So Palace have got defenders who are good enough on the ball. They didn't need to replace that from Anderson because it's already there in the defence. So you don't need to pragmatically shoehorn Kamada into midfield to try and get that because they've already got it at the back. They need players who are capable of transitioning quickly from midfield, from back to front, and Kamada's passing ability in that quick space, his physicality in midfield is just not there.
That centre mid role is massively up for grabs. Is there a question that Glasner doesn't fancy Lerma next to Wharton? Because I feel like we've barely seen them two feature in a midfield two together, which maybe raises some eyebrows as well. Hughes was playing there consistently with Wharton towards the end of last season, but it does feel like he's phased out. And it does feel like a bit of both your points. I do actually think Glasner wants a passer in there for some reason to push the ball forward. Maybe he wants someone in the middle who can also do that pass forward or whatever a bit better. But then we have got Wharton there. So it is really confusing. I think at the moment, Glasner really doesn't know who he wants to partner against Wharton. And that's our biggest issue at the moment because at Goodison Park, Wharton is doing a lot of the work in the middle on his own, defensively, offensively. And we've got a massive hole there in that whole first half. Dwight McNeil was just free roaming in the middle, the space he had. And we need to sort it out. We need to work out that centre mid and we've got to stick with it. For me, Hughes towards the end of last season, he's not perfect, but if you want that kind of pressing midfielder, he does do that really well. He can get a tackle in. Yes, he'll miss a few of his tackles, get a foul in. But for me, I feel like he's the one we need at the moment to kind of just fix it up. We were used to that towards the end of last season. Wharton and Hughes now to play together. Maybe just go back to basics a little bit there and try and not overthink it on Glasner's behalf.
It's incoherent, right? I just think the team are quite muddled at the minute. Glasner, first of all, doesn't know his best team. I think that's apparent. But the ideas, the philosophies just seem a little bit confused at the moment. There's really good spells, but there's spells where it's awful. And I just think that is a product of not having a clear, not clear game plan. Clear game plan's wrong because there is a game plan there. But just a clear pattern of play. Everything just looks like the same word, but everything looks a little bit muddled at the moment. And I don't get it. And I think a lot of people are quite like that at the minute. They don't necessarily get what they're trying to achieve. I think it's clear from the way the players are trying to play because, there's times where the pattern of play that Palace are supposed to have, if you like, under a Glasner system doesn't occur because players don't really know what roles they're playing at the moment. And I just think there's a real imbalance in the team. I think there's real issues in midfield. I agree with you, Luke. I would either put Hughes in there or I would put Lerma in there with Wharton. Maybe I would have played Klein on Saturday at centre half because I get that you didn't want to chuck Chalobah straight in. But yeah, it just feels messy at the moment.
Yeah, just a lack of chemistry maybe is the reason for that. Still, like you said, I completely agree with your point that I don't think Glasner knows what the best 11 is and the proper 11 position. So that is something that is going to need to be fixed and going to need to be attended to.
I think
Let's
on Match of
talk
the Day
about
they
the
said that I think on Match of the Day they said that Glasner has made the most changes to his starting 11 of any manager in the league so far this season.
That's interesting.
Yeah. So
And
that's just the product of not knowing your best 11. Again, trying to work things out. Yes, there's been a couple of injuries in there, but I just there's no coherence. There's it, things just don't make sense at the moment.
there's a lack of balance too on the pitch. I mean, positional balance. One of the things that we can definitely agree with that the role is kind of concerning, or we're not really sure what they're trying to make with is Eddie Nketiah, and it's creating quite an imbalanced attack across the front line, because we have enough data kind of on him to show now, and we can just watch the match. He doesn't really drop in to be a 10 very often. He drops wide, dips wide a little, but really he likes to stay centrally, kind of playing off Mateta as the second striker, or just as, part of a duo. Eze's not really moving into the central areas. He's staying on the left half space as a left-sided 10. So that right-sided 10 space, there's just a gaping hole there. And it's putting Munoz on an island where all we can do is play those long diagonals to Munoz and hope he wins it down. That's not a strong suit, but we saw that time and time again against Everton. It creates a hole for Wharton to not be able to kind of play the passes he wants to play, because that's the side he needs to be shaded to. So it forces everything to our left, and it puts Nketiah kind of out on an island because we have to play through Mateta to get to him, and it's messy. We were missing balance. Either Eze has to drop centrally fully as a true 10, or we have to, like you said, put Kamada there. He's already there, and maybe, let Nketiah play up top and see what happens. But it's a literal imbalance that you're seeing, and it's probably the reason why Munoz isn't involved, why Nketiah is not involved, why we're not scoring goals and attacking down that right side as we should be.
Well, it's
Yeah.
the pure lack of quality in that right 10 role has seen any good work that Munoz does down the flank just dissipate because he's not got the pass to come inside, or he's not got someone to do a quick 1-2 with to create more space down the wing to get across into the box from Mateta. That imbalance is the spot on word. And if you look on the other side of the pitch, the other wing back, yes, he's got a great cross on him, but he can't take a player on. So the ball comes to Mitchell. And if he doesn't want to progress because there's too many players there and he doesn't want to take someone on, the ball just goes backwards and Palace then gets stuck in a cycle of passing side to side or even backwards. So there is a real imbalance across the team. And that's in part is to do with squad building, not having an attacking left fullback. But also it's just due to the way they set up with the three attackers. Now, if you had Saar on the right, he's pacey, he's dangerous. It would mean defenders would be occupied with him. It would then create more space for Eze and Mitchell on the left because players wouldn't be able to double up on Eze because they would have a threat on the right as well. At the moment, what we're seeing is where Nketiah isn't a creative threat necessarily on the right. Yes, he's a creative threat, but I think he's a bigger creative threat through the middle. Where he's not one of those threats on the right. It means that he can kind of just be left with the one defender, and then players can double up on Eze. The centre halves can totally focus on Eze while the right back's focused on Eze as well. So the way we set up, it's coming back to that same word again, is just completely imbalanced. And it means that most of Palace's attacks are completely ineffective.
Yeah, for me as well, we can talk about the team all we want, but it does stem back to this thing where we love to get a player when they become available and maybe not when they suit our squad. I'm really enjoying Nketiah as a player, but he's definitely been a target for years. Glasner can say all he wants that he likes these players, but Saar, Nketiah have been targets for years. And yes, they're good, but the fact is, we're not starting a proper right-sided 10 in Elise's role, and that's a huge issue. And I think it comes back to we sign these players because they're available, we really like them, and maybe we didn't need them. We've got Mateta, who at the end of the last season had a really good, maybe a purple patch, but whatever, 13 goals in 13 games. And then we signed Nketiah to play as a right-sided 10. He's 30 mils, so you've got to play him every game. And then that brings the imbalance. So Glasner, yeah, he can say he wants all these players all he wants, but at the end of the day, Kamada, he started at centre mid, who maybe was seen as partially an Elise replacement. And Saar, he doesn't want to start, maybe because he doesn't think he's going to track back, or we don't know. So two of the players already who he kind of signed to replace Elise don't really seem to be favored there at the moment, and that's a really big issue for us. I think we need to start looking at these windows and kind of adapt. And you know, we lose Elise, let's not get too excited that a great players that we really want to become available. Maybe just focus on them actual players we need, and it might help us, you know.
At the moment, it feels like Palace are banking on the return of Franca, which I think is a concern, because you're essentially relying on an injury-prone player who's barely played minutes of Premier League football to potentially come in and make a difference on the wing, or in the inverted 10 role. Keep calling it the wing; it's inverted 10 role, very different. So that's a concern. But as I say, I think the team is just crying out for a bit of pace, because we try and play in the transitions, but we're not very good at it because we haven't got someone to carry the ball. So I just think it cries out for Sarr to play on the right. I get why he didn't play there on Saturday, because he missed training on Wednesday. Wednesday's a day where they do a lot of their tactical work, so it kind of makes sense that he didn't play. But you cannot keep making the same mistakes of playing Nketiah on the right, Kamada in the middle. There's too much imbalance. It's abundantly clear to the majority of people that watch Palace at the moment. And Glasner's got to change something, because I often think at the moment that to fans, you can't criticise Glasner, because he, walks on water. He had an amazing end to the last season. He's a world-class manager. But if anything, I think that means he should be open to more critique because of how good of a manager he is. And where he's making the same baseless mistakes, if this was Hodgson, fans would be up in arms. So I just think it's really important to be able to criticise the manager when we can all see that they're making the same tactical mistakes week in, week out. Yes, there's been individual errors which have led to a lot of goals conceded this season, but sometimes it goes beyond individual errors when the team selection is clearly wrong.
Yeah, I think that's a great point to make in terms of manager, in terms of players. If we're going to praise them, we have to hold them equally as accountable. One player we don't have to hold accountable that had a strong performance and a first half goal was Mark Gay, scoring kind of off a flubbed corner attempt from Adam Morton, that got a bit of lucky where he got the ball back and played a cross in and a few bounces. The rest is history with Gay scoring his goal at Goodison Park. Luke, you want to take us through that? What did you see, anything in the first half? Maybe not the goal necessarily, but just in terms of how Palace were playing in the first half, did anything stand out for you?
I think, yeah, Gay for me was still very, very good. Really, you know, everyone loves to pick on his size, non-Palace fans, but he really does handle like the big attackers quite well. Even in the build-up to that goal, Kamada did do some good. He won the ball back, I think, and you know, distributed it well, but you know, wasn't good enough from him in the end. But yeah, really good to see that we could get the lead, because I think that was the first time we did that this season. So you've got to take these small positives at the moment, you know. Get that lead. We did miss some chances again in that first half, and I think there has definitely been some issues this season, but that first half does show some promising signs. And if we can just take some of our chances that we've had this season, could have really been a different story. Yeah, there are some big issues, but I came away from the first half thinking that that was an erratic first half. You can tell these two teams are a bit nervy, but I've seen some little things in here that I have think improved from the week before. And of course, Lacroix as well, I thought was dominating everything.
I thought the whole back three were pretty good all game long, to be honest. I mean,
Yeah.
they conceded from two set pieces, but they were sloppy in the set piece. But that's not down to the back three, down to the team as a whole. I think throughout the game, especially the first half, the back three were pretty good. Palace's problems, as we've done at length already, comes in attack. Now, yes, they created chances, but how many of those chances were really clear cut? And there was, what, one clear cut chance in the game, really? For Palace, one clear-cut chance for Everton as well. It's just the actual, they get into good areas sometimes, but then that last final ball to create the clear-cut chance isn't there. And it just comes back to these whole issues with the imbalance. And say, Palace some knock it around well at times, get to good positions, and then can't find that final pass, or can't find that final touch, or can't put a good enough shot towards the keeper. It's, or towards the goal even, don't want it going towards the keeper. It's just really, really frustrating at the minute, and I totally get why Palace fans are slightly annoyed with Saturday's performance.
This is where it's great, where we can combine some good stats and data with actual eye test things to show you that stats aren't evil and not replacing things and becoming our overlords. How can you prove the clear-cut chances? We can look at MPXG per shot. So what is the expected goals of each shot that was taken? Average is about 0.1. So it's about, if you can get the average amount of your shots to have a 10% chance going in, a little bit of word play there, but you get what I'm saying with that. 10% chance going in per shot, that's pretty decent. Last season, when everything was flying for Palace, we were at 0.13 MPXG per shot, best in the league, top of the league. No one was better. Right now, we are at 0.08. Against Everton, we were at 0.06. That's 19th in the league. So you're 100% right with what you're seeing with your eyes. This
And
is just something that corroborates
it's
what you're
even the
saying.
clear-cut chance creation stat. It's either four or five clear-cut chances Palace have created this season. That ranks fourth lowest in the Premier League. I mean, it's to me, it boggles my mind to anyone that can't see it actually. Now it really frustrates scrolling through social media when people still defend it. The chance creation is not there because the front three is imbalanced. There's not a creator there. You're playing two strikers who clearly don't work together because one's very technical and the other is not. So whenever Nketiah looks for Mateta to find the ball, Mateta loses it. I mean, it's just abundantly clear that it does not work. Now, so there's two solutions. You either play Eze, Nketiah, Kamada as a front three, which is highly technical. You'll see some good quick link-up play, and you will get goals. Or you play Eze, Nketiah through the middle again, or and Sarr on the right for the pace. Carry the ball, try and find Nketiah, who's got a decent enough finish on him, or try and find Eze on the edge of the box, and they will score goals. Either one
Yeah.
of those front three will get you more goals than the front three they have now. I think it's criminal. I think I'm being really, probably being really harsh, and people will probably be thinking, "Oh, what is he talking about?" But I just think the way Palace is setting up at the minute is absolutely criminal.
No, the numbers back it up. And I don't think you're being too hot takey at all. And to put a bow on this, Palace's total shots per match have gone up since last spring under Glasner. Shot creating actions per match have gone up since last spring under Glasner. But the MPXG per shot has plummeted. So it's not that their chances aren't being created. It's good chances aren't being created. We're taking shots from too far back. Every time we try and drive forward and make something happen, as you said, we don't have that person that can beat someone off a dribble right now. We don't have that someone that wants to play that final pass. So they're just, taking it, taking what they can get and going for a weaker chance. That seems to be happening, and you can absolutely blame that on the personnel. I don't think there's a reason for it. Look at Mateta. There's no stat in the world that needs you need to see he's just a step slow so far this season. He needs someone else maybe to try some things. Sarr seems to be preferred by Glasner as a striker. So if we do maybe a two striker set with those two, who knows? But to your point, I'm all for changing it up. I think we can't keep doing the same thing and expecting different results. Luke, what would you say?
I do also.
Oh, go on. Do you want to go first, Bobby? Go on.
I do also think that the confidence has taken a hit massively. I just think it will take one win to turn it around. But I think confidence has taken a hit at the moment. You only have to listen to our captain, Mark Gay, post-match on Saturday, who said we need a better mentality as a group. We need to be stronger and we need to start winning games. It's simple. I mean, I think that is a concerning thing to hear from the captain of your football club. Questioning the mentality after six games. You listen to Adam Wharton at post-match, who said we weren't it was not good enough from us. They wanted it more. They were winning the headers and stuff like that. We have to be better. I mean, is it okay for Everton to want it more than Palace? Is it players saying that? It's a concern. And I'm not trying to be all doom and gloom saying Palace are going down. I don't think Palace are going down. I think Palace will work it out. But just at the moment, things are very negative. And things don't seem to be working very well in SE25.
Yeah, I think you're right. It is that confidence and things aren't working well. And Glasner at the moment is his own victim. You know, he's making it harder for himself and he wants to dominate the ball more, wants to do more in the middle of the pitch. Mateta's three goals this season, aside from the penalty, have all been first-time finishes in the 12-yard box. The way we're playing at the moment, Mateta needs to be playing 30 yards outside of the box. Bringing players in together. It's clearly not his strength. We saw it before Glasner. Glasner last season played, so we played to Mateta's strengths. And then this season, it feels like the opposite. So if he's going to continue playing more possession-based, you know, more passing around, more technical, then, you know, use them more technical players that he does have. And help himself out a little bit. Yes, Mateta scored so many goals last season, but we're a club where if a player doesn't perform for multiple weeks, you can't just let them stay in the lineup because that will crucify us.
Two things on Mateta. Firstly, Mateta is best when, as you say, he's in and around the box. He just has to finish. I don't think he's the most intelligent footballer. I think give him the ball to his feet, and if he doesn't have to think about it, he'll finish it. But the other thing with Mateta, last season, those goals came from chances created by Michael Olise the majority of the time. I mean, he was putting things on the plate for Mateta. So, yes, there were some great finishes on there, but he was getting the ball in and around the box because Olise was doing so much work on the right. Now you've lost that, Mateta looks a shadow of that striker. So I agree with you. If his levels have dropped like they have, I think he does at a club like Palace. He needs to go on the bench, they need to play Nketiah, and they need to put someone else on the right-hand side.
Especially when you have a £30 million player waiting to replace him up top. We're not exactly a club that can be burning money in our, burning money like that and playing a person in the wrong position. But to your point about the kind of the mentality thing, I think that's an important one. Do you think that that's something that maybe is an intangible quality that we lost with Anderson and Ayew leaving? And do you think that Lacroix can step up and kind of become that person and take that leadership role?
Well, I mean, you lost core leadership in Anderson and Ayew. I mean, Ayew had been a staple in the Palace dressing room really for what, 7, 8 years? It's certainly felt like that long. And Anderson, I mean, he captained the side towards the end of last season, and it's the most passionate I've seen a player in a long time in Selhurst. But I mean, his levels were ridiculous as captain. He went from being six, always guaranteed you a 6 out of 10. So when he was captain, guaranteeing you an 8 out of 10. I mean, he was phenomenal when he led that side. And so, yeah, I do buy into that, actually. I hadn't thought about it before, but yeah, certainly lost leadership in those two. And probably taken a hit to the squad's confidence, especially when you've added a bunch of new players in there. I mean, Lacroix is a younger player, so he's not going to, and he's new, so he's not going to fill that role automatically, but he's probably got the making of a person who can fill that role. Kamada, replacing Kamada with Ayew, well, there you've replaced your experience, but you haven't replaced with the person who knows the club, knows what they're doing, etc. So that's an issue. But you've still got players like Jeffrey Schlupp in the dressing room, Joel Ward. They're still there every week. So there should be enough in that squad for older players to give confidence to the newer players. But yeah, an elongated way of giving the answer. But yeah, I do agree with certainly what you said about Ayew, and losing Ayew and Anderson has taken a hit to the quality and confidence of the squad.
Yeah, definitely. And you know what? We do have leaders in that squad. Like, I do see Gay as a leader. I think Wharton's got that quality as well. Lacroix definitely does have qualities like that. But you're right, they are all very young, so they're all still learning a little bit as well. So I actually think if they were a bit more vocal, like they can be, it would really help us. And I think they have got them qualities there. Palace do have them qualities there. It'll be really interesting because Lacroix on the weekend was really, really good. And, you know, if he steps up and continues like that, then I think that'll really help our confidence as well. I do think losing Anderson was right financially, but it definitely would have affected a lot of players. And Anderson is someone who, you know, you can definitely feel like he's a good vibe around the dressing room. Feel like Arsenal way last season, you know, he was talking to the fans, you know, maybe a bit of arguing, but that's kind of the player you do need at this current time. And yeah, we just need some of these players who are a bit younger to step up, realise they can do that, just get that confidence back for sure.
I mean, Anderson was well liked. He loved the club and he took no shit. And I personally think that's exactly what you want from a centre-half. Totally agree with the financial behind the deal. Very good business. Selling a player who's just hit their peak, whose value is only going to decrease. But yeah, you certainly lose the leadership. But just backpedaling a bit, one positive I took from Saturday, and it comes back to what Luke said, was how good Lacroix was. I mean, his recovery pace is absolutely exceptional. He will save 3 to 5 goals a season from his recovery pace alone, because he's just so much quicker than anyone. He can so far, he's shown that he can catch up any defender possible. I mean, against Manchester United, it was a loose pass from, I can't remember who now, but Garnacho looked to be in, and from nowhere, about 3 yards behind, Lacroix just legged it, got ahead of him, and won the ball back. I mean, really promising. I do think he's a bit tentative at time of putting a tackle in. He often gets the player in and doesn't put the tackle in when one on when defending on like the wings and things. So when he comes out and Munoz tucks in behind him, sometimes he gets the player and doesn't put the tackle in. But that's something he's going to learn. He's settling into the Premier League. He's played, what is it, two, three games now? But I think he's certainly looked very promising. There is promise there. Not everything's all doom and gloom. There is good stuff that Palace do, but we just don't see enough of it at the moment.
Yeah, and you can see already with Lacroix that he's a little more comfortable in getting forward into that pocket to support Munoz as he drives forward. Similar to what you see Klein do. Obviously, Klein can't do it as much anymore with his age. He's done admirably for us, but something that he did that maybe Richards couldn't do in that role and some other guys couldn't do in that role is have the kind of the spatial awareness to know where to be to still offer some threat and attacking build-up roles, but also use your pace to be able to stymie any counterattacks. And so far, I'm really impressed with what I've seen Lacroix there. In terms of the goal, he's getting forward, he's moving, he's doing things that I think are really going to be important for the club. And as I said, I know he's young, and Luke, I'll pass it to you and see what your opinion is on this. But I know he's young, but I do think he has the mentality that he could be a leader for us moving forward.
Yeah, definitely. I do feel like he has got that personality to him for sure. His ability from his first game that we had with him to now is just like you can tell that he's getting more comfortable, and we haven't seen the best of him. Not saying he hasn't been good. I just think there's still another level that he can go, and that's really exciting to see. I think once we get that back three kind of sorted and, you know, set up and consistently playing matches together, it's going to be really exciting because the ability that our back line can now have is exceptional.
It was another instance in which Palace seemed to be a team of two halves. And in the past matches with Leicester and Man United, where it seemed to be that we turned it around and got a little better in the second half, it wasn't the case where Everton, where we looked just far worse across the board, obviously letting in two goals and blowing that 1-0 lead that we had going into halftime. So, Luke, can you want to take us into that first goal and what went wrong, what you saw in that entire half?
Yeah, for sure. Well, from second one of that second half, it just felt like we were completely different to the first half. Everton were fully on us. They just decided to press us a little bit more, and it was like we weren't ready for that at all. Obviously, then you go to that. We tried to pass the ball out from the back, the mix-up between Kamada and Eze. Obviously, Kamada's pass is clearly not strong enough. Eze's also making a run that looks like he's trying to go behind the defender. So it's again just two players kind of miscommunicating. It's been 50-50 in the Palace fan base whose fault that is. But at the
Crazy.
end of the day, there was still a lot for Everton to do after that. Dwight McNeil winning that ball, running a couple yards. And it is a worldie. You could see from our end, he was smashing that absolutely top bins. But, you know, defence was too slow to come out. Everyone was really slow in reacting. And, you know, when Kamada and Eze both realized that ball was lost, none of them really reacted either. And I think that's our issue we were kind of branching on earlier in terms of we just don't have that player who's ready to react to these kind of things, and that is affecting us. So of course it's a worldie. But yeah, it was definitely preventable. That was very preventable, especially so soon after the second half start. And you know, it just felt like from second one we just didn't want to play in that second half.
Yeah, it was tough because, to your point, whether the pass, who was moving away from the ball or what, as they didn't track back, once the pass was misplayed, Kamada seemed to follow a run that he could have passed off to Mitchell, and he could have closed the ball carrier down. So it was just, I don't know if there's any one person to blame. I think it's like most things where there was quite a bit of culprits that we could throw the blame on, but to your point, it just seemed like they never got it out of gear. I don't know if it was a mentally demoralizing thing for them, especially after that second one went in, or if it was just tactical and we couldn't respond to it. Bobby, what do you think with that? Do you think that it was more of a mental component of breaking down or after that second goal, or do you think it was something that maybe Glasner's system was found out a bit by Dyche?
Well, I think we've done the issues. We've overdone the issues of such in speaking about it. I think there's problems in the setup. Yes, the goals are from set pieces. But I just think Palace were very weak in their defence. They actually cleared the initial set pieces. It was the aftermath where they were weak or made poor decisions. I do think there's a mentality aspect to that. I do. I think there's a system aspect to that. Just think it's all over the place, really. Absolutely all over the place for both goals. There's a lack of mentality in that second half. Everton were up for it. Palace were not. They got found out. They could be purely off fight because Everton just give it more. And yeah, Palace became a very soft touch in the second half. And really, Doucouré should have wrapped it up from open play when he got through at the back. And Lacroix just done enough behind him to put his shot off balance. And Henderson recovered. Fortunately, may I add.
Yeah, and as the season goes along, we're going to look back at matches like this, matches like Leicester at home, and probably view them as opportunities for points lost. And again, we're not talking relegation talk, we're not talking anything, but for achieving the goals you want to have in a season, you have to kind of go to into these matches expecting to win, being the aggressive side, and coming away with more points than that. I mean, looking forward.
Realistically, if you don't want a season of mediocrity from West Ham, Brentford, Leicester, and Everton, you must take at least 6 points. Palace have taken none. I mean that West Ham game is scandalous in itself. Glasner was abrupt with his substitution. He brought on Kamada and holding midfield. Palace opened up in midfield. West Ham scored five goals. Sorry, two goals in 5 minutes, rather. If only it was five. Two goals in 5 minutes from the midfield completely opening up. It's just not good enough. It's frankly not good enough. You can't lose to Brentford. All right, Palace possibly should have won that game. The Eze free kick, maybe a little bit different, a little bit different in luck. Where will we be now? Who knows? But you can't lose Brentford, West Ham, Everton, and Leicester. You
Right
can't
here.
only pick up 1 point from those four games. It's just not good enough. Absolutely not good enough. I mean, Leicester are awful. Everton are awful. West Ham have proven to be awful after that Palace game. I mean, they've looked shocking. And I thought they were pretty poor against Palace as well. It was just Palace opened up completely and the floodgates opened. And Brentford, well, like I said already, that game, bit of misfortune there, but I still don't think Palace were good enough.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I think putting a spin on it, we have had chances in all these games. Everton, not so much, but the ones before that, we had opportunities to either take the lead, of which we didn't. And they're really big moments for us, and their moments could have done something. There is, for me, there is definitely some positive signs there, pre Everton. And then Everton was the bigger worry because that second half, we barely created anything. It just felt like the players are a bit like, my God, we've been trying these last three weeks, nothing's been happening, and now they scored two goals in 5 minutes, and there's no one to lift them up, and it's really, really worrying. Of course, if we can finish some of these chances, I mean, Eze against United, Edwards and Eze against West Ham as well, who knows what could have been? The confidence would have been completely different, and there are definitely glaring issues in this team. But when we haven't been playing perfectly, it's just frustrating when we haven't been taking them chances like a club like Everton have been.
Even if you look at the two cup games, right? Against Norwich, that was a second-rate Norwich side. Second rate is probably a compliment because I mean they completely rotated. It's not the side they use in the Championship week in, week out. Yes, Palace put four past them, but at times it was tough going. I mean, some of the play was so laboured, it was painful to watch. It wasn't the most enjoyable 4-0 I've ever witnessed. And the QPR game. Well, I thought that was absolutely shocking, and Palace was lucky to still be in the competition. After the game, it was very much job done, but how they did the job, who knows? Because they were very fortunate to walk away with a win that day. QPR played some pretty decent stuff at times, and the minute they showed a bit of fight, Palace didn't look up for it again. There's a real lack of character in this side at the minute, and there's a real lack of quality. And that, for any team, is a concern. I think Palace have got really good players, but at the minute they're not a really good team. And I think that's what it boils down to.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think that this is a case of Glasner being found out. I think it's, individual lack of individual quality in moments. If you look at every main metric.
When it keeps happening, That does come down to the manager, I'm afraid. If the same issues keep occurring, which the way I've watched the games, the same issues are reoccurring every game, and I've already said it in this episode, that comes down to the manager, I'm afraid. You can't just keep blaming individuals.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if I'm putting blame on anyone, but you're right. Evidently, at the end of the day, ultimately, it does come down to if the gaffer's in charge, what the gaffer's lineup is, he should be the one that takes more of the blame for it. But just from his tactics specifically, not from his man managing or lineup choices or anything like that, the statistics are very, very similar to what they were. All the major ones from last year, the ones that are important, you know, your tackle win rate, your passing, your creativity, your things like that. The things that are obviously not there are goals, right? We're not scoring the ones we should be scoring. We're underperforming our XG pretty considerably, one of the worst in the Premier League. And the average quality of shot is lower. So not only are we getting poor quality shots, but then we're not finishing the ones we should be taking. So
The entries into the box are considerably lower as well.
the entries into the box are not cons I mean, what are we calling considerably lower? They're about 10% lower than they were last year.
That's a
Nine
lot.
point
10% is a lot.
9.5%. I would say that's statistically pretty significant. But yeah, 9.52% if we're going to complete
Yeah,
full nerd on you.
that's a lot.
Yeah, so it comes out to about 1.5 per 90, 1.5 less per 90 minutes, which can absolutely be the course of a difference in a match.
Yeah, definitely. And I think to kind of play a bit of both sides here, there is definitely fault from Glasner, of course. First half, we were 1-0 up. You know, it there were positive signs for me. I was a bit confused when I saw Lerma on the left, but it worked really, really well. Kamada was actually, for me, the first half was decent, not perfect, not saying that, but there were signs to say, oh, look, this he could actually be better than we've seen the last few weeks. But yeah, it just comes down to the moments like that halftime team talk. I would love to know what actually happened there. Did we go in a bit complacent because we took that lead? I don't know. But so I do think it comes a bit down to squad players at fault, Glasner at fault. International break coming up in next week, is it? Is probably perfect. Hopefully, most of our players don't get called up because I just think we need Glasner to set up his 11, pick his 11, and just have, you know, 2 weeks of them getting them consistently and just stop changing it when he doesn't have to, maybe, you know, take the risk, keep them on a bit longer.
I mean, the first half was fine. And actually, I go as far as to say the first half was good. Everton had
Yeah.
one sniff the ball across that tap, Calvert-Lewin couldn't tap into the back of the net. But apart from that, it was pretty controlled from Palace. But the second half was dismal. And I think a lot with Palace this season, you've just seen inconsistent performances. There have been spells of brilliance and spells of just dismal, dismal, dismal football. Which is a concern when you look at any Premier League outfit. Now, if you look at the Man United game, first half was atrocious. Palace should have been 4-0 down. Manchester United should have been out of sight. Not to sugarcoat it, there's no way Palace should have still been in that game. If Man United were a fraction more prolific, then they would have been outside, and there was no way Palace would have come out for the second half, and they probably would have shipped a few more. But then in the second half, they improved. But if And that was good. And the football was good at times, and they had chances to win the game. They were much more defensively disciplined, and there were positive signs there. But then carrying that into Everton, in the first half, it was pretty good. Second half, disjointed again. Everything is too inconsistent, too disjointed, and there's just no coherence across performances. And like I've just said, I keep saying the same words because I don't think there is much else to say on it. It's a concern.
Yeah, this is why I think he needs this international break because what we were start last season with him or when he joined, we weren't great, you know. The Luton game, the Bournemouth game, the Forest game, it wasn't perfect. We had that 2 week camp away and it was completely different. I think I'm not saying he's faultless, by the way. I do know there's been complete issues with Glasner, but I do think we can turn this around. We've got the players. We just need them all to kind of be training together. Hopefully, you know, Shaloba's fit. You know, hopefully the starting 11 that Glasner wants, whether we agree with it or not at the moment, is all just fully fit to have a good 2 weeks of training, you know, just so they can, because you're right, it looks disjointed, it looks unbalanced, and maybe they just need this time together, you know, away and just more than 5 days training before the next match. You know what I mean?
They will turn it around, and I wouldn't say I'm extraordinarily worried, but I always just think it's good to analyse the problems. What I would say about the international break is it actually productive for Palace? Because they could have as many as, what, 11 players out on international duty, have four go into the Americas, so they won't return until the Thursday before, is it, they play the Forest after the international break? Is that the first game out after the break?
Yeah.
So they won't return until the Thursday before Forest. Okay, Palace don't play Monday, so that's a bit better for once, rather than going straight into a game on the Saturday. But yeah, so four, like I say, four players in America. You'll have Kamado going to Asia. You'll have quite a few players in Europe. Maybe Water might be back involved in one of the England squads, whether that's the senior squad or the youth squad. You could even have Mateta called up for France. Now, I personally think it's unlikely because I don't think he's ready for that step up. But you never know with it, injuries across their front line. So I don't think the international break necessarily is a good thing for Palace, because bigger clubs can deal with it because they've got huge squads, and when they come back, it's all right because they can make sure they manage the minutes effectively. But Palace haven't got that luxury. And who is Glasner going to have to work with over the international break? And like I say, it could be as many as 11 players away. They've got injuries as well, so Riyad and Doucouré. It almost makes it worse, because you're just going to have another, what, 10 days apart where they can't solve the issues that are currently facing them.
Assuming Doucouré is still out, assuming Richards is still out, knowing Riyad is still going to be out, Luke, what would be your ideal 11 to roll out against Liverpool this weekend?
I think Henderson, obviously, Munoz, Mitchell, Lacroix, Gay, Chaloba, if he's fully fit. Then I'd put Lerma in the middle with Wharton. And for now, when there's a defender that Liverpool have in Van Dijk and also another physical one in Konate, I'd probably drop Mateta, have him as an impact sub, maybe give Nketiah, Sarr and Eze a go. You know, we are playing more on the ground. It might suit us a bit more against a team like Liverpool.
Very interesting stuff, interesting stuff. Bobby, how would you line it up?
Yeah, exactly the same. Wharton and Hughes in the, or Wharton and Lerma in the middle even. Chalobah, Lacroix and Guy as the back three, with Mitchell and Munoz either side. And yeah, a front three of Sarr, Nketiah and Eze. I think the lineup picks itself personally. I've said it since the QPR game that this would be my lineup. To me, it's clear, but I'm not a football manager, and there's a reason I'm not a football manager, and Oliver Glasner is. So we'll see what happens on Saturday.
Yeah, this won't make for the greatest content because it's a clean sweep. I'm 100% on board with both of you. Playing on the break a little bit with those three. We saw it in spurts, maybe 15, 20 minute spurts so far this season. Really liked what I saw with it. Really liked the energy they brought with it. So I would be for it. Let's see what happens. You know, a match like this, the expectation isn't going to be so high, so let's use it to gel some lineups that we think are going to be our strongest and where we're most formidable.
So I think Palace will do well to keep it below three, so they may as well try something different.
Yeah. Easy 2-1, mate. Easy 2-1 victory. Come on.
I mean, the amount of slander I've given, slander's strong, but the amount of criticism I've given, no doubt they will beat Liverpool on Saturday. And let's hope they do. Let's hope we're all proven wrong. But I do think it's going to be a very tough game. Arne Slot's got Liverpool playing well, apart from one blip that they've had so far, dropping points to Nottingham Forest. But other than that, Liverpool look very good. I've been really impressed. It's been almost a seamless transition from Klopp to Slot. That was very difficult to say, from Klopp to Slot. But no, so it's almost been a seamless transition. They're a difficult outfit, and Palace will have problems against them on Saturday.
Yeah, it's one of those situations where we really hope to be wrong on something like that, and we'll celebrate if we are, but the expectation shouldn't be too high. This is a match. Yeah, this is a pairing.
I despise being negative, but I really find it difficult to be positive at the moment because the performances just don't warrant it. It's, you know, the analysis we can do at the moment is only on the negatives because, well, we've done the few positives, but there aren't very many apart from a decent first half.
But yeah, this feels truly like
Everton side that are fractured and that are booing their own team, you should be having a decent first half. You should then be backing that up with a decent second half. I mean, Goodison Park was toxic on Saturday. There's no way Everton should have found a way back into that game, but they did. Palace let them. Palace lost control of the game. It's not good enough.
Yeah, for sure. Spinning it, only thing you would say is this game against Liverpool, we'd always go into it, underdogs. Hopefully that helps the players a little bit, trying to spin it positively, players have played a bit better in terms of, yes, first half against Man United wasn't great. Second half was much, much better. If we can get them type of performances in these bigger matches, get the crowd back behind the boys, because it is hard when the form's been so bad to get the crowd going, it is the nerves kick in. So for me, I'm always saying at the moment, every half, we didn't do it against Everton, but you just got to hold out the first 15 minutes of the half at the moment, because if we don't, as proven in the second half against Everton, we do capitulate at the moment. Just need them players to, wipe away them nerves first 15 minutes in, grow into the game, because that's kind of what we're doing at the moment.
You have to remember as well, just what was it, 6 months ago, that beating Liverpool was the catalyst of Crystal Palace's phenomenal unbeaten run after really struggling under Oliver Glasner. So, I mean, that underdog mentality, well, not mentality, but that underdog feeling Palace will go into the game with on Saturday might just be the something different, the boost they need. You got, as well, the points Palace have picked up this season have come in the games where you probably don't expect them to pick points up. So there is that kind of underdog mentality that feeds into, and let's say a win against Liverpool would do massive thing for the squad. It would massively lift the morale. The mentality would probably improve off the back of that. And you've just got to hope Palace can put in a positive performance on Saturday.
Yeah, that was certainly that none of us really saw coming either. I guess that's why it's the Palace roller coaster, as they say.
I think the other thing that's worth picking up on is the conundrum of Eberechi Eze at the moment. Now, I've seen a lot of conversation about fans maybe calling him lazy to an extent, becoming increasingly agitated with his performances. I just wonder what you guys were thinking on that.
He does have these moments, doesn't he? He has them moments of brilliance, of great form, and then he has these moments where they're not so good. I don't think he's benefited at the moment by the fact that we don't have that other creative player in the starting lineup on the right. Teams know they can just double up on Eze, and it doesn't help him. It doesn't help him. And then, his confidence drops. He starts playing it backwards more. He doesn't want to take a player on because he thinks there's going to be two on him. And that is an issue. And it's something we've got to work out. We need to give him more freedom, more space, and then we'll see him thrive again.
But in defense of his mistakes and his sloppy, you don't pick up a point against Chelsea without him because he's not there to score that goal. And I just think with a player like Eze, sometimes the sloppiness in possession in your own half, sometimes the laziness in your own half is expected. And now it's just the question is it a worthy trade-off for the contributions he's given you? Now, Eze on top form? Absolutely. Because he'll cost you a couple of goals, but he'll score you a hell of a lot more than he cost you. But Eze at the moment, other than that Chelsea game, isn't really contributing much to the team. So I just think he needs to be given a bit more support in attack, to be given a bit more freedom. And then we will certainly see the mistakes that he makes. People won't moan about as more because he's providing more goals and assists to the side.
Yeah, I think this the system itself right now, it's structured to almost bracket him off and put him in a tough situation. And that's Glasner trying to figure this thing out. So that's not helping him. But yeah, it's becoming the, trying to do a little bit too much, the Zaha thing that we saw for seasons on seasons, just trying to do a little bit too much. And to your point, Bobby, that's okay when you're knocking some in and, we can give some stuff away. We can have some errors here if we're scoring goals. But when the goals aren't coming and the assists aren't there, it does get a little bit frustrating, but he's the same player we've always seen it. People get frustrated with him when it's not coming off, and people praise him when, he's looking at his best. So this is just kind of that dip in the ebb and
I
flow
think
of
that
Eze.
in any creative 10, if you like, I feel like that's just the part of their games. That they're gonna make mistakes in their own half because that's not their game. But when they're facing the opposition goal, 9 times out of 10, you can expect them to do something magical. And as I say, I just think obviously the trade-off in that is you will concede a few goals. But if they're knocking them in the other end, does it really matter? But the Palace's issue is obviously that they're not knocking them in the other end at the moment.
Yeah, he's had that data there, hasn't he, to show that he has been somewhat a very good asset in terms of attacking ability this season. It's just been them fine margins, West Ham and Man United, to say the least.
Even the free kick,
Probably,
Brentford.
yeah, exactly. This time or end of last season, he probably would have scored at least one of them, if not all of them. You know, it's just the way it goes sometimes with these number 10s, like you're saying.
The Man United one was probably the most frustrating of the lot because all he had to do is not shoot where he put it. Number one, get it on target, and number two, go the other way because the net was completely gaping. He had so much more chance of scoring. So his decision making has been slightly off in attack. And like I said, I think that's led to more criticism of his defensive contributions, of his apparent laziness when defending, if you like, is the word that people have used. That it's not necessarily one I would brandish on him, but that kind of attitude in defence is just being picked up on more because he's not getting those numbers yet in attack. But like I say, it's almost going back full loop to where we started. But if you change that right hand side to take the pressure and take the onus even off of Eze, then you'll see his numbers increase significantly because he's got a bit more freedom, he's got a bit more space, he's got a bit more opening on goal.
Yeah, and to go even more back to where we started, it was an Eze goal at Anfield last season against this Liverpool club we're playing this weekend that did kickstart this entire run that gave us this positivity, that gave us the optimism. So hey, we're not saying history can't repeat itself here. This is absolutely something that we could turn around, but we have to start to see it from Eze. We have to start to see it from the players around him to not put him in bad situations, and we have to really start to put on that fight that we can be proud to support.
Yeah, they've got Champions League midweek, you know, Liverpool. Slot may rotate against us. You know, little things could work in our favour. We could get a decision or two, you know. It's just, you never know. Early kickoff. Never bet on the early kickoff.
Yeah, if it was Klopp, I'd fancy my chances because he throws a tantrum when it was when he half 12 kick off after in Europe. But it's not so much more a calm figure on the touchline, I would say. Tough game against Bologna on Wednesday. As you say, a little bit of rotation could help Palace, and maybe it's the great opportunity they need to finally kickstart their season.
And there you have it. We'll wrap it up there. Thanks everybody for listening. Hope you enjoyed. If you like what you're hearing, we'd really be grateful if you could just go and leave a rating or review on whatever app that you're using to get your podcast. 1 star, 5 star, anything in between. Any and all feedback is greatly appreciated. Really helps us to improve and lets us know what we can do better and help get the Palace fans that content that they want. Don't forget to check out thepalaceway.com for news, opinion, analysis, and more. We even have our very own Wordle, aptly named Wardle, after club captain Joel Ward. I don't know if you can even hear the difference in this American accent, but there you go. Have at it, boys. You can find us on X and Instagram at The Palace Way and on TikTok at The Palace Way Pod. All one word, exactly spelled, just like you'd imagine it. By the way, don't forget to vote for us at this year's FCA Awards. You can vote for us at Best in Video under the Creators section and form at footballcontentawards.com/voting, VOTING. The deadline is October 13th. That's all that's left for me. Let's have some final words from Luke. Luke, thanks for coming on.
Yeah, no, it's been really enjoyable. Let's hope things turn around, you know, and let's hope these future appearances I can come on and it be a bit more positive.
Oh, man, trust me. Love nothing more than that. Would love nothing more than that. And as always, Bobby, thank you for coming on. Brilliant as always, my friend.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I wouldn't go as far to say brilliant myself. Maybe the takes have been slightly hot at times. More frustration than anything for that. I certainly think I might not be thinking the same things other people might have my own opinions, but I certainly feel the same frustration as everyone else at the minute. It's been a tough 6 weeks to start the season. Hopefully things can get better from now on. I mean, some tough games coming up, some really tough games, but all it takes is one win to change the fortunes. Yes, I've highlighted the issues in abundance on the podcast tonight and in the piece I've written. If you haven't looked at it, please check it out. It's available on the News Shopper. You can find the link on my Twitter. But yeah, on to Liverpool on Saturday, and hopefully next week, if I've got the pleasure to be on, we can have a much more positive conversation.
Trust me, it's always positive when you guys are on, man. It was a good time, good talking with you. And we'll leave it there for now. We'll have hopefully a good weekend. Hopefully we can talk about a nice result. As always, I'm Pat, your host. Take care. Up the Palace.